Welcome to the first episode of Innovation Odyssey in 2025 that's being recorded. Today, I have with me in the studio Thomas Krupf, who is the co-founder and CEO of RiskWolf. Welcome, Thomas.
Hey, hi, Rino. Very good to meet you, and thanks for having me on your cast. And happy to join today.
Yeah, me too. So I'd like to start with asking the founders who they are and what their company does. It's a 30-second elevator pitch.
Yes. Yes, thanks, Rino. Definitely, I'm basically the co-founder and CEO of RiskWolf. I'm an insurance entrepreneur, 25 years of experience in this industry, mostly in insurance and reinsurance on the non-life side. Basically, I've built RiskWolf to enable insurers and also insurance players to build, design, and operate parametric insurance at scale. So that's what we do.
Okay. So two things I have to ask. For a lot of people who are not so familiar with insurance, and we don't expect people to be familiar with insurance, do we? It's a very strange world. What is parametric insurance and what is the counterpart? And I've also heard that parametric does not scale. So correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, thanks. Again, I have answers to both of them. And the second one, we can dive in a little bit where the areas, maybe it might scale or it might also be used in a more broader area. So definitely parametric insurance is the counterpart to a normal insurance. The normal insurance everybody of us buys is more or less, it's called indemnity-based insurance. And here, basically, what happens is the insurer insures a company or an individual against like something like happening at the house, it's something burning down or it's a car accident. So you buy the insurance for that. And once something happens, this event, like the accident, you file a claim and the insurer gets the claim. And then based on the claims process, they pay you back either the loss or a certain limit. You might have a certain limit which already is defined in the contract, or you might have a full loss and the insurer pays you the full loss. And this can be a lengthy process. Whereas in the parametric, as the biggest difference is in parametric, you predefine the payout based on an objective measure. Again, this can be, for instance, a massive weather event. This can also be just a very clear signal. For instance, there is no train or there is no lift in the ski resort running. So there's an objective trigger which basically cannot be manipulated by both. Neither the insurer nor the insurer can manipulate this trigger. And typically, weather is something we can't manipulate. And so based on this trigger, then both parties, the insurer and the insured, they agree on if this happens, for instance, there's going to be, as a farmer, I have 3 months of drought period, and I know then my yield will go back by 35% typically or 40%. So what I can do as an insurer, I can offer the farmer, instead of a claims process, I'm offering the farmer, for instance, yes, I pay you for each day where you have an additional drought or additional missing rain, I pay you a certain amount. And this amount is basically more or less compensates you for the loss of the yield. So you earn less, but you get something back from insurance, which makes up for your losses. And the idea of parametric is naturally to define these triggers in a way that they really correlate, more or less make sense, and really correlate with the loss. And if they correlate with loss, then you reduce the so-called basis risk, because that's one of the big naturally points and the problems of parametric is if the basis risk, meaning there is the event happening, you lose a lot of yield, but the measure is not there. So you don't measure this with your objective measure. Then you have a so-called basis risk. And the idea of parametric and to make sure that it scales is to reduce the basis risks. And this is a little bit also what we see at RiskWolf, that making these triggers, really adjusting these triggers to what's really happening on the field or with an income or with a yield, and making a trigger making triggers accurate is the biggest challenge of parametric. On the other hand, once you make this, then you can scale as well. So that's a little bit that. And on the scaling, happy to dive in a little bit more.
So do you offer the insurance cover per se? So as you, are you an insurer or an MG or a broker? Or do you have a platform that helps to make sure that the triggers are well documented and can be put in place?
Yes, it's a second. So we are a technology company, and what we offer is a platform. And we always work with regulated insurers or brokers, MGAs. And as you know, the insurance market on a global scheme has different setups. Each country has jurisdictions have different regulations. Some markets are more broker markets. Some markets are MGA markets. Some markets are direct markets, and it's a combination. So what we have built is a platform which can work with all different parties. And typically what we work with is an insurer or more as an insurance carrier, or more sometimes we work also with companies who basically build own insurance programs as a buyer. So they're basically using insurance but want to use it in a way that they can serve their end customers. So we have built this platform which can basically serve these, where we can build up parametric programs with these parties. We are supporting them with data, first of all. So basically, data is nothing else. For instance, on the weather side, we have different types of satellite data, different types of weather stations, different types of national weather bureaus. And this is typically all already agreed in the market. What are the data accepted? What are the data sources accepted? And then we give them a kind of a process stack and a computation stack where they can really use it with two things. They can, on the one, we have a tool which is more on the coverage design. So they can use it really to build coverages for like income. Like, for instance, we built coverages for farmers. We built coverages for gig workers where they have income loss due to a heavy weather event. We have a loan program where we build coverages which are embedded in a bank loan. So we protect the non-performing loans due to a weather event. So we have different templates and coverage designers. And you can then really click through this coverage design. Yes, I want to use this data source. I have only a 3 months coverage. I can do that per crop. So I have like Apple where I have a crop periods, so I can really fine-tune my coverage and the different perils. I can include rainfall, temperature. I can include typhoons or hurricane conditions. We also look at specific conditions like wildfire, hail, where we have the data. And these perils, so-called perils, then can be brought together in the product. And what we then do, we reach out to insurers and reinsurers. Either there's already an insurer on the book, but they might want to look for a reinsurance capacity. So what we can then bring in on the platform was a reinsurance capacity and also the reinsurance pricing. And then once all parties agree, yes, that's the right product, that's we have a distribution, then basically we monitor this program for all the parties. So we execute that.
So it's really the data service converted into a product template and eventually pricing that helps the insurer or the provider of the service of the insurance product to actually scale.
Exactly. So there's two models we provide. We provide model where we support also the pricing itself, also the modeling of the risk with the actuarial models. And so the one case is there is an actuarial model already around. There's already pricing with a term sheet and the conditions around. So there we more import the pricing and operate that and enable a quotation like into a broker channel or into an embedded insurance channel. Or the other way where we really are more from ground up there, the pricing is not yet concluded. So they still want to then use different models and come up with the right price. So we then support different models, but they're always signed off by a regulated insurer. So we go with a regulated insurer who has then also the sign off and basically the sign-off of the regulator that this parametric product is allowed in the market, and then the pricing and modeling, we can support this as well. So that's the two models. Either is there's one already around, or it's really done on our platform. For this, we have historic data, typically, because I guess as this is also the same as with indemnity insurance. You need the historic data in order to understand what has happened in the last 40 years, 50 years. And for parametric, on the weather side especially, we then apply trending, detrending. So we look at the curves and say, yes, is this now accelerating, these rainfall patterns, or are these more getting less? So we can then use these factors to really make a model pricing available. So that's a little bit on this end.
From what you've told me, it's more weather that you offer support for rather than other things, shipping, transit. That's not your thing, right?
Yeah, so we started again from the company since we're 5 years old. We started with just totally different perils. We started with a product initially with cloud and internet downtime. So when we started during COVID, we've seen there's a lot of shift to online and e-business, and everybody has gone through that in the last couple of years. So what we offered is a product which compensates either an e-commerce shop or even just a normal company who uses like a Microsoft Office 365 on the cloud, or even companies who use certain software for critical processes, like airlines who use weather reports. And then we basically came up with a model which compensates against cloud or internet downtimes. So we measured this information with our data providers, and we also had our own model. We have our own measures. We built up that during 2 to 3 years. The issue there was no capacity. All capacity was available, which was more linked towards cyber. And there was not really yet capacity available in the last couple of years from the markets in terms of cloud and internet outage, since the key problem is not solved there. Is when are these big events happening? What's the recurring period of the catastrophic outage, which they need to basically, the reinsurance need to understand the long tail, because typically they price this long tail in. But if they don't understand the long tail, when the big event happens, they can't really price then also the short tail, because they don't know if it's happening next year. Do I have to have a surplus of 10 or 20 or 30 percentage on the premium, or is it not happening? Is it only happening every 500 years or 50 years or 5 years? So that is a little bit the challenge there. So we've decided to move in an area where we see just the market and the demand and the supply, and that's the weather parametric where we now are active.
And when you did that, did you have to take on particular modeling skills in your team?
Basically, when we built up the weather side, we already hired people in India who basically came from the agriculture parametric market and have actuarial degrees and also a lot of expertise in this sector. So for us, the move from cloud internet to weather was even easier, since all of a sudden we had some knowledge already in the team, which is important. And what we've seen also in India, we've seen a lot of experience in the market with parametric models already, because I think that there's one reason in India, I think, or two reasons. One is, I think, first of all, there's actually totally different types of penetration. It's a very low penetration in insurance. So insurance is not really a product somebody buys. And the parametric program naturally allows to run insurance programs at a low cost with relatively low payouts. Whereas with indemnity, if you have a very low premium, just the claims adjustment costs are just eating up the premium. So which means parametric is naturally a good solution for a market which has a very low affordability, low premium, where you need to give out products which can be operated automatically. So I think that's why India already has a kind of a natural market, since again, due to these many, many smallholder policies. And also that the government has already issued, and also the regulator already issued some kind of, also there is paramedic insurance is a kind of a pillar of their government kind of goals to bring more insurance in India with the plan, with the 100 year of India in 25 years, if I'm correct, then the plan is to bring this penetration up. And for the government and the regulator, paramedic is a piece, is an enabler of penetrating, of bringing the penetration of insurance up. And that's why there is also a buy-in of this side. Whereas in other markets, it's seen as a little bit, as a kind of, why should we use it even in Europe? I think Europe might open up, and also US now with the Valencia, with the floods in Spain, with the cat events in Europe, in the central, in Germany and other parts, with naturally the wildfires in California and the Florida situation. Also in the US, we see parametric might have also more acceptance in these markets if the traditional market is leaving or it's also not really functioning how it should. So India definitely, and also here also include some other countries that are in India, definitely is a market where paramedic has already a high buy-in, and also it's really a model which can be used for a lot of smallholder policies. That's a little bit mine.
So do you think that I'll come back to India, but like, do you think the California fires, you think they could have been, the people would have been, clients would have been better protected with parametric?
As I think in the mature, in the Western economies, my takeaway, and also when we basically looked with a partner last year into California, how to protect Californian households against wildfire. And we looked at two types of markets. We looked at the low kind of low revenue, low income markets, which basically, and then we looked at the high income. And naturally, now this time there was more high income areas hit. And what we've seen there is two things. One, you can't just sell paramedic insurance in a market which is regulated like that, so that there's not no incentive to buy an additional parametric layer, or it's not seen as an additional element, since the regulator already regulates the market. The other thing is you have to have both prevention and insurance together. You look at both ends. You look at how can you prevent with better housing codes, with kind of other activities. How can you prevent the spread of the wildfire, or at least how can you prevent that your house is going to be burned down? Naturally, if it's too big of a fire, then we've seen that's not really helping. But there is definitely prevention measures possible. And the other one is the alerting. So what we've looked at is how can, for instance, insurers start to use alerting, prevention, and insurance as a package. And these ideas, I think, now will start to resonate since everybody sees you cannot insure just the event. If the event recurs every year, then there's no insurance anymore who can be paid, who can be financed. On the other hand, if you bring in more prevention, better housing codes, better alerting, then maybe you can reduce the impact of such events. But it's not something where there's one company doing it. You need a kind of an ecosystem, regulator, state commissioner, regulators, also different types of services. Plus, then that you need to bring in better data. You've seen that also in Spain. How can better data, short-term forecasts brought into, how can these alerts be given to everybody who might be affected at real time? As these topics, real-time alerting is definitely something also we see in Europe, which could really help if you bring these information into the right channels to the people who might be affected.
Okay. This podcast is a lot about people who like are from one country and then move and build businesses in other countries. And like, I see that you actually spent some time in the US, you are a Swiss-based company, and now you're setting up shop in India. I'm right, correct?
Yes, definitely. India, we have an own subsidiary, and it's a market which we're really focusing at the moment, since we have also kind of an ecosystem which we've built up more or less from zero in the last couple of years. So it's definitely something where we see, as a Swiss company, staying in Switzerland, that's a no-go for us, because again, you have to start with our our technology. We have to build up a global presence from the get-go, since otherwise you basically are not able to really scale the venture. And this has been like from the get-go, we've set an office in Singapore from the first day, more or less, or once we moved out of bootstrapping. We always had the idea and the goal to build up an Asian presence. And also US is for us also a target market, but maybe as a second step.
Okay. And in India, is there any difference? I mean, I have the same background. I'm Indian, but American and not Swiss. So I see the differences popping in front of my eyes. But have you seen any differences that you can talk about?
I was raised in Switzerland, and I'm Swiss. So in India, naturally, it's just the opposite of Switzerland in terms of insurance and in terms of how the whole insurance ecosystem is built. So besides the cultural differences and all the other differences, I think we should not go too much into that. But generally, I think the interesting thing about India is, I think the culture between Indian culture, Swiss culture, naturally, there's big differences. On the other hand, in the insurance industry, and I'm also active in Philippines, I'm active in other Indonesia, I was a couple of times in Brazil now. The insurance industry, I think the people working there, the culture is pretty much alike globally. It's more conservative. It's like we're not trying out the new things just from day one. They're looking at actuarial tables, and an actuarial table has no culture. It's just an actuarial table. There's nothing more beyond that. And I think that's refreshing, because at the end, you're looking at the same thing. And naturally, India, for us, having no footprint in the beginning, we hired, as a first of all, the key thing for us, what we've seen is you need to hire clever, and you need to hire somebody as a first employee, or the first two employees need to be really clever hires. And you can't hire somebody who just goes in for the money and the transaction. You need to hire somebody who wants to grow with your company, who really sees the vision and not... And actually, I'm not overdoing this. You don't need to have like vision talks every day, but you need to have somebody who sticks to what you're doing. I think, again, having the right staff from the beginning, building up a good team with a good team culture. And then you need to build up a local footprint with insurers, with the ecosystem, with the networks. I think that's something that takes time. We see now India, we worked probably 2 years now actively, and now we really have first couple of contracts. We've won first insurers as clients. We have now also kind of bigger goals in 2025.
So you were mentioning that in India, the insurance ecosystem, it took you like nearly two years to build, and it can't be done in a very short period of time, correct?
Yes, definitely. So what we believe is you have a combination of really local staff, where you build up around one or two people which have the contact, which have the skills, and also are really committed to what you want to achieve as a company, since it's quite innovative and new. And probably 2 years you need an insurance, since the first year they learn you, the second year they start to use you in some pilots, and the third year then they really, maybe the one or the other starts to scale with you. And I think that's every insurer globally is the same way. It's they have enough for them. A year is just another year in their underwriting portfolio. It's not like, whereas at a startup you need to move every year fast, but the insurer don't have this kind of time pressure. So you need to plan in probably more. I think definitely there's companies who might do it in less time, but also you might even spend more than 2 years. But I think 2 years is a good, for us, it's a little bit like the ones where we see also for a new market, we're looking at Brazil, we're looking at US. We basically start already in parallel in some of these new markets.
And we know we have to build up a relationship. So we do that while we are trying to build up more presence, like in the India market. So that's a little bit the goal here. Start with that and continue with others.
And when it comes to funding, I'm going to assume you're not bootstrapped anymore. You've got some investor funding and you're looking for the next level. Is that where you are?
Yeah, so definitely we have a combination of investors, and also we have a grant from the Swiss government, InnoSwiss, we basically naturally, as a startup, we are working on how we achieve the next business milestones. We have a runway where we can work on that. We are also challenged generally in the InsurTech bubble 2021 with the reframing of what's growth, what's profitability. And so our goal is 2025 to become operationally break even, and we are on the path to that. So which means we also will be in a position where we can showcase a good case to investors, I think later this year, into Series A round. At the moment, I'm comfortable what we're doing. Naturally, I look at our clients. I look at how can we get in more clients. How can we bring our model into bigger programs? So which scale? And the trajectory 2024, 2025 really looks good for us. So we can have had some first pilot programs in 2024. We now move them into larger programs with typically between the pilot and the scale-up phase, it's between factor 3 to factor 10 in a program, and we get new programs in. So for us, this is the right trajectory. But definitely on the investor side, we are interested. We have kind of, as a co-founder and CEO, I have a continuous discussion with investors. Actually, some of them we discuss since years, or we have some check-ins. But for us on the business side, definitely we want to achieve strong milestones in 2025. I think that's the one key element where everybody looks at. What's the revenue? What's your projection? Is that really something we can build up? And the other one, do we have the right markets? We believe India is a good market to also showcase to investors, because it's not such an easy market. And it's not a market where you just normally go to, probably more go as a European startup to Europe or US. And we really want to showcase, no, you can also build up a presence as a Swiss startup in a market like India. And we can do then similar like in other countries around Asian countries, emerging countries. So that's a little bit the story for 2025 here.
Also a little bit to your personal story, what really, you've been like a consultant in IT and finance and working for Swiss Re. What made you start Risk Wolf?
Yeah, it's a good question. So generally, I think the spark to really start something on my own, it was not set just 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I think I already had that in the 20s after my studies. I already had had my own company during my studies. I had a company when I was in New York. I was part of a venture, corporate venture, and then I built my own company in New York back 25 years ago now. so it's already been there. I've been part of an industry initiative. I've been part of also a small startup in the carbon insurance area 15 years back. I have my own company with my wife in a small consulting company we founded together also 16 years ago. So there's always been an entrepreneurial piece. I would say with Risk Wolf, I'm more like old school in terms of you need to build up some industry knowledge, some really deep industry knowledge to really do something in insurance. So I have this experience of the 25 years in this industry, I think I want to utilize this expertise with Risk Wolf. So for me, this is now like a kind of a logical step of a path I'm already on. I think personally, I think I always, already since I'm younger, I wanted to have a company which is active, which is global, has a global presence. I think I always want to do something like that. So that's not...
And I always ask my guests, are you an entrepreneur or an innovator?
Yeah, and this is a... or I think it's in a way, and I think every entrepreneur is an innovator in some areas. And otherwise, I think that's why there's an entrepreneur. Otherwise, you're a manager. Now, these are now very, very, very high level. Maybe I think either also managers can be innovators in a trade. But I think an entrepreneur is definitely somebody who has seen the pain and really from ground up wants to do something against the pain point or against something which the entrepreneur believes she or he believes that is something you need to change, and they need to believe in the change. I think, which in a way, innovation is a tool for change. I guess it's not the same thing. It can also be routine. It can be also other things. It can also be laziness. But it's not always innovation. Again, but I think the entrepreneur wants to change. He or she, without change, I think you cannot become an entrepreneur. If you're afraid of change. You have to embrace change and see you also have to be an optimistic person. And I think that's also an innovator. Somebody who innovates probably needs to be an optimistic person. Otherwise, you would go crazy. If you would be pessimist and innovate an entrepreneur, I think you would just, your brain would go dead. But personally, if somebody asked me entrepreneur versus innovator, I would say I'm more of an entrepreneur, but actually, because I think innovation is a tool to change, but the entrepreneur is really the person who walks a change with all the consequences, also economic consequences.
yes, that is very true.
Like low salaries, no salaries, like moving through periods of yes. Do we get some investment in? Do we get this client? Does this client sign? So there's a lot of naturally pain points. You might be afraid of something. You have new situations where you not know really because you cannot repeat something from your past. You have to think about what is the right way. But I think that's more entrepreneur.
And in the spirit of wrapping up, what is your outlook for Risk Wolf? I know you shared a little bit before. For 2024-25, and I even forgot to ask this, what's the role that AI will play in that?
Yes, and the AI topic definitely will is something I think everybody has to have a mindset around a little bit in the future. Whereas I think there's different pieces of that which also are very volatile if you look at the recent events. So AI might not be the same AI in 2 years. And I think overall, you need to see what really you look at in terms of AI. But generally, I think maybe before I go to AI, I think the future, I believe, of Risk Wolf and anybody working in insurance, I think the parametric will merge with indemnity insurance into a hybrid model, which have components of parametric, which might be paying out fast, and then you have components of insurance offerings which just go through the indemnity claims process because you need both. I think that's the future of insurance. It's a combination of certain index-based insurance or parametric elements where you can give the client a fast payout, where you've predefined the conditions of the payout and say, look, if that happens, both sides agree on we're gonna issue 20% of the limit, and then you might then go into the traditional process for a more kind of focused individual claims assessment. I think on the AI side, generally, I think everything around insurance is first of all around trust in the insurance ecosystem, because insurance is a promise to pay. So I give somebody money and then there's a promise to pay if certain things happen. So without the trust, there's no insurance, because why should I give money to somebody just as a prepayment and then hope that I get something back? So I think an AI will definitely, I think I'm not seeing AI helping on the trust issue. I'm even seeing the other way. AI might create further elements which are not really helping on the trust side. Where I see AI is two things. Is I really see it on the underwriting as a more moving to a more conversational design, how to build products, much more intuitive that AI can help you in the design speed. And also, and that's something also we will focus on at RiskWolf. And the other one, I think on the operational side, I think AI can definitely help on the claim side, bringing in all these measures of satellite information, censoring local measures into a claims cockpit where you really can improve claims efficiency with using AI models, trained models, which really can interpret data very fast in a very accurate way that you really say, yes, that's something where I can gain a lot of efficiency. So these two areas, I believe, are going to stay for AI. But still, without affordability, without trust, there's no insurance. So these elements need to be built up in the ecosystem.
Okay, I like that. I mean, I think talk to a lot of people about AI, and I actually think you're the only person who's on my podcast who's actually talked about trust. It doesn't mean that others don't think about it, but you've like actually voiced it, and I think that's very important now. So I thank you for that. And it was really great to talk to you today, Thomas. I've seen RiskWolf evolve from the cloud outage times to where it is now, and I'm really happy to have had some great conversations with you, both off mic and on mic. And I wish you and RiskWolf a fantastic year ahead.
Thank you very much, Renu. Likewise, thanks for having me on the podcast, and good to catch up.